From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by DataPipe Managed IT Services, delivering a comprehensive suite of managed services, including implementing, securing, and scaling applications designed for mid-market and Fortune 1000 enterprises. DataPipe.com.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Democrats have struggled in the South ever since Richard Nixon devised his Southern strategy during the 1968 presidential campaign. 40 years later, is there a chance that Democrats could become competitive there again? How important is the South to a Democratic victory in 2008? Well, joining me now are two analysts who have very different takes on the situation. Bob Moser, whose article, The Way Down South, appears in the February 12th issue of The Nation magazine. And Thomas F. Schaller, the author of Whistling Past Dixie, How Democrats Can Win Without the South. It's published by Simon & Schuster. And I'm very pleased to welcome them both to my show. Hello.
Now, hey, Leonard.
Tom, isn't the conventional wisdom that you can't win the White House without winning the South?
Well, it was, I guess, until my book came along, and I'm hoping to change that conventional wisdom. And I think... But I think it is fair to say that that has been the conventional wisdom for the last half century, for sure, and certainly since the Southern strategy as carried into the White House by Richard Nixon and subsequently by Ronald Reagan and both Bush presidencies.
And borne out by every election we've had.
May be changing.
It's been borne out by every election we've had since 1968, hasn't it?
No, actually, Bill Clinton got 270 non-Southern electoral votes in 1992 and 1996. He did carry some Southern states. What Southern Democrats often say is no Democratic president has ever won without carrying a Southern state, but they very curiously pass over the fact that Bill Clinton got 270 non-Southern electoral votes twice and that Al Gore came within 7,200 popular votes in New Hampshire of doing it while winning the popular vote in 2000, and John Kerry, amazingly, while losing the popular vote, came within one state, Ohio, of doing it in 2000. So the Democrats have done it two out of the last four times and came within one state of doing it the other two times.
Bob?
Well, I think that one thing you have to look at is that a non-Southern strategy, which is what Mr. Schaller is recommending, has been really tried in the last two elections. Al Gore and John Kerry both wrote off almost every Southern state except for Florida. And I think that this has something to do not only with simply the numbers of electoral votes, but also with the message and with who you're speaking to. And I think that if you're not speaking to Southerners, you're not speaking to middle America in a lot of ways.
Is that the reason the Democrats haven't been successful in the South, that they're not speaking to middle America?
I think Democrats haven't been successful in the South because they've lost their identity in the South. They've lost their identity around the country in many ways as well. The Republican Party, when they did institute the Southern strategy, actually came across as a party that suddenly had a message. For years, the Republican Party was the mushy party of the center. It was the Eisenhower Party. And really, nobody could say what the Republican Party stood for except as a counter to the Democratic Party. We're sort of in the same situation now with the Democratic Party. And I think that if the Democrats really decided to take the South seriously, decided to take middle America seriously, that they would have to develop a really thoroughgoing economic populism and a really progressive message on economics that would resonate and give the party an identity again.
Tom, do you agree?
Well, I certainly agree that the Republicans delivered a message starting with the Southern strategy, and part of that message, as Kevin Phillips himself articulated, was that we're not going to meddle in your region's politics and enforce civil rights legislation and reforms on the South, and that message obviously worked very well for Nixon. Nixon in 1960 ran, as Republicans had for 100 years, attempting to appeal to black voters. He got 32% of the black vote in 1960, an unfathomable figure for a Republican since and certainly today.
And Tom
Wicker learned
his
lesson watching Johnson, Barry Goldwater against Lyndon Johnson carry his home state of Arizona and four deep South states with the first attempt at the Southern strategy and said, aha, why bother parading around the country with Jackie Robinson as I did in 1960? Better to use race to peel the South away from the Democrats and convert those white Dixiecrats into Republicans. And so, sure, they came with a message, but look what that message was.
But as Tom Wicker has claimed anyway, Richard Nixon could also be called the last liberal president. He was a supporter of affirmative action. He was the last president to wholeheartedly support federal imposition of integration court cases. Whatever he said in public, he actually was very much a person who did things that you would have thought the Solid South would have been opposed to.
Well, I mean, read Kenneth O'Reilly's book, Nixon's Piano, and how very carefully Nixon used race in ways public and private, subtle and not so subtle, picking Agnew, who antagonized people who African-Americans in Baltimore, about 5 miles from where I'm speaking to you today, literally on the day after Martin Luther King was assassinated, blaming that assassination in Baltimore on African-American radical leaders. And as soon as Nixon heard about that, he said, that's my guy, literally Nixon's Nixon, as a way to signal to the white South that he wasn't going to take all this stuff. And look at the sorts of things that he did in terms of the Equal Opportunity Commission reforms and the way he tried to gut them and to foot drag on them. I think this has been chronicled very clearly. And to call Nixon sort of a race liberal, I think, is missing a larger history here.
I guess you agree with Tom on that one.
Well, I would agree with him on that one. I do think that the impact of race on Southern elections is now much exaggerated. I think
the South has changed. Isn't it the most integrated part of the country these days?
It is the most integrated part of the country. That doesn't mean that it's integrated in the way it should be, certainly, not in neighborhoods and not in schools. But I think that one of the things, the other part of this story, we talk about the Southern strategy of the Republicans. We don't talk about the lack of a Southern strategy for Democrats. And when the civil rights movement succeeded, when integration happened during the Nixon administration, in the 70s and 80s, there was a chance to build on the, you know, very easy process of integration in the South once it happened. It was very nonviolent. And there's really a story of Democrats not developing the part of political tradition in the South, the economic populism, that, you know, really was an important part of it. There was a cultural populism. That's what Republicans picked up on, and that race was a big part of that. Democrats did not pick up on the other part of it.
My guests are Bob Moser and Thomas F. Schaller. We're talking about the Democrats and the South. And, Tom, you point out that there are now Southern voters who've never seen their state go to a Democrat in a presidential election.
Yeah, if you're under 50, and unless maybe you lived in Arkansas or someplace, you may have never seen a Democrat carry your state in a presidential election. And so what we have now is, you know, attitudes on politics and on partisanship, though I don't think they're socialized the way they used to be. It used to be you'd wake up in a home and you would see FDR over the mantle, and your family was a Democrat, and your grandfather was a Democrat, and your parents are Democrats, and so you're a Democrat. We don't socialize political attitudes. I know this as a college professor. Students come up to me all the time and say, I don't know if I'm a Democrat or Republican. And I have to say, well, let me ask you about a few litmus issues or whatever, and help tell them that. It's puzzling, actually, that this happens. But, you know, in the South, I think, you know, if there is socialization, just as there is, say, in the Northeast with the Democrats, there is some socialization, and people, you know, are raised and are familiar with the voting patterns of their parents. It's an imperfect process. But if you've been raised in an era where almost every major politician you know is a Republican, it becomes very difficult for you to break free of that and start to identify with the Democrats, much as it was very difficult until the civil rights movement came along for Southern Democrats to begin. It was an apostasy for them to vote for Republicans. This was an area of the country that was completely dominated as a near monopoly, if not a complete monopoly, by the Democratic Party for over a century.
Do you expect to see more swing voters in the South?
Well, I think there are some swing voters in the South, and the strange irony is that many of them are non-Southerners who've moved into the South from outside the South or outside the country. If you look at the areas where the Democrats are most competitive, the I-4 corridor between Orlando and Tampa, plus southern Florida, northern Virginia, which has 15% Asian Americans now, the Research Triangle Park, where I went to college at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, and college towns like Blacksburg and Athens and Austin, they're populated by non-native Southerners. And so, you know, Bob Moser's very eloquent essay in The Nation is called The Way Down South, and the way down south for Democrats is literally to bring people down into the South, because those are the areas where Democrats are most competitive.
Well, that is true. And one of the problems, though, with that theory so far has been that most of the voters who've come down are Republicans, and they are, though, a different kind of Republican. They're moderate Republicans. And one of the things we have seen in the South, for sure, when you look at the South now versus 1968, 1964, we have a lot more swing voters, a lot more independent voters, and that really has been the most dramatic change. The Republican Party is nowhere near as strong as the Democratic Party once was in the South, as Mr. Schaller says.
Haven't both Democrats and Republicans given up on 50-state strategies?
Yes.
Yes.
As well they should, actually.
And yet, and the Democrats have pretty much given up on the South, haven't they? Because they'd rather spend their money elsewhere?
If you're asking me, I mean, that's essentially what I'm arguing. I'm an advocate for Howard Dean's 50-state strategy, because all he's saying is we need, you know, three or four paid people in every state. I mean, there were some state Democratic parties that didn't even have a paid executive director. And I was an advocate both in the book before and subsequent to the 2006 elections for the 50-state strategy. Now, Howard Dean said we're going to hire, you know, 20 Democrats in Mississippi and 20 in Michigan, I'd be the first to call for his resignation and a CAT scan. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is targeting is easier than ever given the technological advances in campaigns and consultants. And more to the point, we just lived through the two most stable electoral college elections in American history. Only three states changed between 2000 and 2004. New Mexico and Iowa went from Gore to Bush, and New Hampshire went from Bush to Kerry. You have to go back to George Washington's reelection after he ran the table twice to find two such stable presidential elections, and there wasn't even popular voting then. So it's particularly painful and costly to fail to target properly and to waste money in states that you can't win. Karl Rove learned that lesson, for all we call him a boy genius, in California in 2000. He was spending millions in California the last week that I bet he wished he were spending in Florida.
Republicans have in the past had more money so they could get away with that. But now it seems to be that both parties are fundraising at fairly equal rates. You're nodding your head, Bob.
Well, that's right. And I think that one of the things that we're seeing is that Democrats have had a pretty narrow range of targets in the last couple of presidential elections. And I think that's a problem. It's not just a problem in terms of the numbers, in terms of winning elections. It's also a problem in the long run in terms of crafting a political identity and really having a very strong message. And I think that one of the problems is that people perceive that Democrats are running away from the South. People perceive that Democrats are running away from red America. And that says something about the Democratic message and about Democrats' belief in their message.
We'll take a little break, and when we come back, we'll find out why Democrats are perceived as running away from the South. My guests are Bob Moser, whose article, The Way Down South, appears in the February 12th issue of The Nation magazine, and Thomas F. Schaller, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Maryland. And his book is called Whistling Past Dixie, How Democrats Can Win Without the South. It's published by Simon & Schuster. We're back with two analysts who have very different takes on the Democrats and the South. We'll go into those a little more detail, although I think you're probably getting a sense of them. We have in the studio Bob Moser, whose article, The Way Down South, appears in the February 12th issue of The Nation. Thomas F. Schaller is the author of Whistling Past Dixie, How Democrats Can Win Without the South. It's published by Simon & Schuster. Thomas, is it fair to say that when pundits and the press talk about red states versus blue states, they're referring mainly to cultural politics?
I think that's part of it. It's not all of it, but yes, mostly culture politics, sure.
So aren't the Democrats at a disadvantage on the cultural divide in the mostly red state South?
Sure, just like the Republicans are at a disadvantage in the culturally blue states of the coast and the Northeast and in increasingly larger parts of the country. I mean, one of the most interesting developments of 2006, and in my book I said the Democrats should, you know, consolidate their power over the Northeast, expand their control over the Midwest, and pick off pockets of the interior West. That's exactly what they did in 2006. And so for the first time in 50 years, 52 years actually, since the 1953-54 83rd Congress, the majority party in the South, in both chambers of Congress, which of course is the Republicans in both the House and the Senate, is actually the minority party Congress-wide in both chambers. And so the notion that one cannot build a majority party without the South or very little Southern help for the Democrats has been refuted by the most recent presidential election. So, I mean, the Democrats on most of the issues, particularly cultural issues, whether it's embryonic stem cells, whether it's Terri Schiavo, whether it's abortion, have the majority position. And so, in fact, five of the 11 Southern states, including Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, Virginia, and Texas, have more self-described pro-choice than pro-life voters.
But they seem to all be legislating abortion out of their states.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly why, and I think that will change over time as the demographics, as Bob correctly points out, continue to change in the South, whether it's because of generational change among native Southerners or it's because of the emigration to the South of people from outside the South and from outside the country. But I think long term, this cultural war is a losing war for the Republicans. And, I think the Terri Schiavo episode and the Mark Foley episode tore the lid off this whole, use cultural issues to distract voters from voting their economic issues. I think that's an issue Bob and I probably agree on in terms of his arguments about economic populism and its importance to the Democratic majorities.
Well, Bob, let's talk about economic populism. As we pointed out earlier, Bill Clinton won 8 South and border South states in 1992 and 1996. Many people feel that he also took the Democrats toward the center and away from the economic populism of the past.
Well, I think that's true. And I think that one thing you see with the Democratic Party is a paradox. They are more competitive in terms of fundraising, partly because of this legacy. But at the same time, they've lost their message. They've lost the sharpness of their message. One of the things that you see when you look back at what Republicans did in the South and most of the country in the 60s and 70s is that they changed the terms upon which a lot of people voted. People had traditionally voted on economic issues, and people had also voted on cultural issues. But cultural politics has come to dominate, and I do not think that Democrats can really build a national majority, a durable national majority that will last on the basis of a response to the Republicans' cultural politics. We need a more positive message, and we need to believe that we can in some way change the terms upon which people vote.
Well, Howard Dean set off a firestone in the last presidential election when he said that he wanted to get the votes of guys with Confederate flags on their pickup trucks. That led to a lot of criticism that the Democrats didn't understand the South.
That did. And I think that it was really an interesting debate, because what you saw is that very few people in the South, black or white, objected to what Dean said. There were a lot of party leaders and other presidential candidates who came in on behalf of rednecks in the South, on behalf of black people in the South, and said that they were both offended by his comments.
Now, you did put quotes around rednecks with your fingers, but people didn't see that.
I did. And actually, you could call me one, too, so it's all right. But I think that what you saw with Dean is that he was trying to get at something that was quite important. And I think that people in the South recognized that we need a more class-based politics rather than a more race-based politics.
But it also suggests that Democrats would be appealing to people who are opposed to gun control, something that the Democrats have been associated with in the past.
Well, that's true. And I think that one of the problems here, once again, you get back to, do we reinforce with voters the fact that they should be voting on cultural issues, which gun control really comes down to for most people. It's not a constitutional issue for most. It's really a cultural issue. And it goes along with a lot of other cultural issues. And I think that, you know, if you talk to these guys about what the Democratic Party really wants to do for them economically, I don't think that the gun control issue is going to be predominant.
But the gun control issue really reflects another part of the Democratic Party's history, which is that it has been largely the party of the urban north and big cities in the west as well, Los Angeles, cities that would like to see more gun control because they're the ones that have to contend with gun violence. Tom, you want to jump in on this?
Well, that's certainly true, although the violence rates are actually extraordinarily high in the South, whether that's domestic violence or other forms of violence.
So why isn't as big an issue in the South then?
Well, maybe they should. I mean, in my book, I actually argue that the Democrats should support the Second Amendment and should take guns off the table, so to speak, politically, because I do think it's a losing issue for them. And I'm a civil libertarian, a card-carrying ACLU member. And for me, even though I'm not a particular fan of the Second Amendment, I don't believe you get to choose which elements of the Bill of Rights you like and which ones you don't.
But we can also interpret the Second.
I just think it's a matter of internal consistency. I say that as a professor and as somebody who studies, you know, the Constitution. But putting my personal views aside, what I think is interesting is there's always this assumption that the Democratic Party needs to understand the South. It needs to come to terms with the NASCAR voter. You never hear the inverse argument. You never hear the argument that George Bush and the Republicans need to somehow get a better understanding of, say, the Northeast, where there are now 22 members of Congress, only one of whom, Chris Shays of Connecticut, is a Republican. The Democrats have 21 of 22 states, seats there. And what's interesting about the NASCAR voter, if you think about him, is that he's, generally speaking, a married, Christian, non-unionized, white man from the rural South. That is, obviously, there are NASCAR fans who don't fit that profile. But look at the electorate. With each passing election, it becomes more female and less male. It becomes more non-white than white. It becomes more urban, suburban, particularly inner suburban, and less rural or exurban. It becomes more filled. Non-traditional families are now more common than traditional families in the country as of 2003 or 2004. And the country's becoming more secular. There were 8% seculars in 1990, and now they're 16% of the country. They've doubled in 15 years, something you'll never hear on national television. And so going after the NASCAR voter is not only doesn't make sense for Democrats because that person is the least likely person to vote for them, it's also a declining market share. And you never hear anybody say George Bush should have gone into East Cleveland at the end of 2004, an election that he barely squeaked out, and talked to unmarried single women of who are black and Latino and wearing a Rockaware jacket and a red Cleveland Indians cap turned backwards. That would be an absurd notion, but the notion that Democrats have to wear flannel shirts and run around at NASCAR events is considered an obvious need for the party. It's a clear goose but not gander double standard in national politics.
My guests are Thomas F. Schaller, whose book Whistling Past Dixie, How Democrats Can Win Without the South, is published by Simon & Schuster. Also, Bob Moser, whose article The Way Down South appears in the February 12th issue of The Nation. They both have advice to the Democrats about what to do with the South. Different advice. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Tom makes a very good case there, doesn't he?
Well, he does, except that my argument is fairly similar here. I don't think that the Democrats need to run these kinds of cultural political campaigns in the South to win, and certainly not to win in the long term.
But you think they should go after the South. So how would you have them go after the South?
I think the first thing you have to do is show up. 90% of success is showing up, and it's true. Democrats have not been showing up in the South. I lived in Alabama during the 2004 presidential elections, and I was working for the Southern Poverty Law Center at the time. And you saw no evidence, really, of a Democratic campaign. You heard no Democratic message. And part of what I'm talking about is the fact that the longer Democrats do not compete vigorously in the South, do not take their message, not some version of the Republicans' message, but their message to the South, the longer it's going to be before people even know what that message is.
But don't most of the Democrats who win in the South have a modified version of the Republican message?
They do, and that's partly because the Democratic Party on the national level has really disconnected itself from Democratic parties in the South and the state level, and that's gone on for the last 40 years. And you've kind of left Democrats on a state level without any campaign organization, without any funds coming in from the national organization, and they've had to compete on the terms that they can compete on locally, and this is what they've done.
John Edwards, a son of the South, has argued for economic reform and also for social equality, which is not a message we would normally associate with the South.
Well, it's actually part of a very long tradition in the South, and one of the things that's happened in the last 40 years is that we've forgotten a lot about that tradition. There was a really strong strain of populism that was biracial even in the 1890s, led by the Southern Farmers Alliance and the Populist Party. And there was extremely strong support for the New Deal. The South was the strongest supporter of Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal. And I think we've forgotten about that because we've come to see the South in terms of cultural politics, in terms of Republican politics, and we don't see that there is this latent tradition of economic liberalism that's very strong.
Tom, haven't the Democrats tried to deal with their Southern problem by nominating Southerners for either the presidency or the vice presidency? They haven't had a Midwestern or Western strategy in that regard.
Well, I'm arguing that they need to have a non-Southern strategy, but running Southerners on a ticket actually works well. And in fact, the Southern strategy, if you notice, 68 Nixon Agnew, that's California, Maryland. Then you have Reagan, California, Bush, Connecticut, I would argue, not really Texas Bush, and then you have Bush Quayle, which is Connecticut, Indiana. So the Southern strategy worked brilliantly with non-Southerners for 4 years, and so the non-Southern strategy, as Clinton Gore proved, works very well. And the reason it works, and I think Bob and I agree, is not so much that the Democrats are going to win Alabama. I don't think anybody thinks they're going to win Alabama in the near future, but because they win Missouri, a border state, they win West Virginia, they win Southern Ohio, which is enough to carry Ohio, they win the border states that have a lot of people who share Southern sensibilities, even though they're not technically in the region of the South, depending on how we define it. I define it in the book as the former 11 Confederate states.
Well, how come Al Gore couldn't even carry Tennessee, which is his home state and is a border state?
Well, I count it. It's actually a Confederate state. I count it as a Southern state, so yes. But, the problem with the economic populism message, putting the states aside, and I agree that economic populism is the key to the Democratic majority, but in response to Bob's piece that's coming out in The Nation this week, the two problems with economic populism and its appeal to the South are race and unionization. If economic populism sold biracially, as it did before white Southerners had to choose between controlling the region from the imposition of the federal government on civil rights, then white Southerners in the poorest state in the Union, Mississippi, should be voting almost identically to black Mississippians in that state. And yet in 2004, 8 out of 9 blacks voted for Kerry and 7 out of 8 whites voted for Bush. And so literally poor whites and poor blacks who live in the same communities, who go to the same schools, who shop at the same flat malls, who go to the same restaurants and sit side by side at the same Friday night football games, when it comes to Tuesday every other November, vote in absolutely opposite directions. And it's hard to explain that if economic populism is this panacea without talking about race. And race, we cannot talk about it in the past tense. In 2004, according to the National Election Study, which has been conducted by the University of Michigan since 1952, attitudes of white Southerners on national defense and abortion did not explain their presidential votes, but attitudes, negative attitudes on race, did.
So what does that mean for Barack Obama?
It means, unfortunately for Don Fowler, the former DNC chair from South Carolina, who predicted this weekend that Obama would carry could carry Mississippi, Alabama, and South Carolina, is deluding himself. I don't even think Bob Moser would agree that Obama has a chance of carrying Mississippi, Alabama, or South Carolina in 2008.
Bob?
I think we'd have to have a very strange historical circumstance, indeed, for that to happen.
That's a polite way of saying it, yes.
Well,
here's what's interesting, just as a sidebar. People say, well, if the African Americans would just vote, But according to the 2004 census, and I hate to bludgeon people with the data, African Americans are 17.9% of Southerners, and guess what? They were 17.9% of voters. And given the fact that they're disproportionately poorer than whites, and that and voting turnout tends to be strongly and positively correlated with socioeconomic status, that means blacks actually outperform whites given the fact that they're poorer.
I think that you're absolutely right about that. One thing that we haven't done in places like Mississippi is really try to sell economic populism to white people. That's one of the problems here. You know, the Republican Southern strategy came in. There hasn't been a very strong answer to it over the last 40 years. And as a result, people have continued to vote along these patterns. They haven't been challenged to think beyond race.
Would Hurricane Katrina have affected?
I think Bob is absolutely right about this. And I think there's a moral case to be made for making the economic populist appeal. I think he's making it very eloquently. And I wish it would work, because then the Democrats would be arguing about whether they're going to win 40 or 45 states in a presidential election instead of 20 or 25. But the problem, the second problem beyond race for the white working class South is unionization. And the fact of the matter is that as a key interlocutor, as a key communicator of economic populist appeals, unions work magnificently. And unionization rates in the South are the lowest of any region. In fact, no state has been ranked in the top 25, top half of unionization rates in the country in the South for the last 60 years. I mean, the Southern states are ranked all from 35th to 50th. And if you look at this last election, again, 2006, non-union households and families, they split 49-49 in the best Democratic presidential year. So who won the election? Union households and union members and union retirees and union families, who broke 64-34 for the Democrats. And the unionization states are all northeastern, midwestern, far western states. If you put a map of the right-to-work states, which are the non-union states, against George Bush's 2004 electoral map, it's almost identical.
Well, what about Hurricane Katrina? Did that change anybody's mind in the South?
You know,
did we see it reflected in the congressional elections?
We did not see it reflected in the congressional elections very, very thoroughly. I think that the people who did talk about it did well. Jim Webb talked about it quite a bit. And John Yarmuth, who won for Congress in Kentucky in a pretty large upset. But the Democratic Party did not make it an issue. And I think that that was a mistake. I think that you do not convince people that you mean it when you talk about economic populism, that you mean it when you talk about progressivism, if you don't take something like this incredible catastrophe seriously.
The president was hurt nationally by the lack of response, but not in the South, not in the areas that were affected.
Well, that's right. And it's a perfect example of the Democrats not taking the message that they need to take to the South. It was a tragedy, and it illustrates the tragedy that we see every day in so many parts of the country, not just in the South. And I think it was an opportunity that was lost in many ways.
Tom, we're pretty much out of time. You want to finish up?
No, I applaud Bob Moser for arguing for economic populism. I think it is working for the Democrats and did work in 2006. I just think it's going to work last and least in the South, because race and cultural issues intervene, and because unionization rates are so low, it's hard to communicate that message to the least unionized, most racially polarized region of the country.
And my thanks to both of you. Thomas F. Schaller's book, Whistling Past Dixie, How Democrats Can Win Without the South, is published by Simon & Schuster. Bob Moser's article is in the current issue of The Nation, February 12th issue of The Nation. It's called The Way Down South. And I thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.